Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be discussing a subject matter that should make you very thoughtful. We all, as people, have a tendency to want to look to others as being the supreme whatever that can change our lives. And sometimes, well, not sometimes, frequently, you find out those that purport to be the gurus or the end-all of end-all, so to speak, end up having some pretty big clay feet and then some. My guest today is a lady who has walked a journey of association with a very famous man, James Arthur Ray. Her book is titled Tragedy in Sedona. She was a part of his inner circle, and this story is a testimonial to her own personal experience, but an insight into how sometimes leadership can go very, very wrong. Connie, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Donna, for inviting me.
Your book is very powerfully written because you take a number of different positionings in the book, one of being a student, another one of growing out of victimhood, self-discovery, learning a great deal, having exciting adventures, and eventually realizing that the man that you had thought was such a phenomenal teacher becoming something that was a lot less than that. Was this book a tough one for you to write?
Well, yes. Obviously, after you've read the book, Donna, you know there's some sections in there where having to revisit things in my past was extremely difficult, not
yes.
just revisit, but to actually type the words was very
mm-hmm.
difficult. It was also, but it was also very enlightening to myself in that as I looked at this as a timeline, when I laid out the outline to do what I was going to do, which was to get to the bottom of exactly what happened to the best of my ability, when I did that, so much became so clear to me that would not have come otherwise that it was a blessing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what happens when you put pen to paper or finger to computer keys and you start itemizing conditions and situations out, and if you've had any diaries or anything that you can refer back to, you go, oh my goodness, wow.
Yeah, well, hindsight.
It's really an eye-opener.
Well, hindsight's 20/20, and of course, when you read this book, you kind of know part of the ending. So it's easy to go through the process and go, well, you know, you can see that coming. But when you're in it and you don't know the ending, it's not that easy. And there's that point in times in your life when you have to make a call. And I liken my whole whole relationship with James Ray over those 3 years as kind of almost like a dating kind of a relationship. You know, you meet somebody first, you see a lot of things in them that you think you're going to learn from and you're going to grow in this relationship, and you're all excited in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time, you get to see more and more of them. In my case, we were privileged to be the inner circle, the behind-the-scenes people. We coached a lot of people through a lot of these activities and a lot of these events. So we got to see a lot more of the underbelly of how his operation worked and how he truly was. And as you get to that in any relationship, you know, sooner or later you come to a point where you may look at this person and go, you know what, I love you, thank you for what you shared, thank you for helping me grow, but, I just can't walk your path with you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's more bad in this relationship than good, and we need to part ways right now. And that's what we got to. In 2009, luckily for my husband and myself, just as little as 2 weeks before that sweat lodge in Sedona where many of our friends died, we got in a couple months earlier, we got in a fight with James in Peru, a very loud, disagreement about
mm-hmm.
how hard he was pushing people, and it was not necessary. to climb a very dangerous mountain above Machu Picchu. And that turned out to be a very loud public fight in a hotel in Aguascalientes right at the base of Machu Picchu. We felt we still needed to clear some of that up because it wasn't handled in that discussion. James tried, of course, blow it off and tell us that the discussion wasn't necessary. But we had a phone call with him just a couple of weeks before Sedona. And because we couldn't resolve the concerns that we had with what we were seeing in his behavior, we told him in that phone call that, one, we would not be volunteering at any more of his events, and we would not be coming to Sedona with him in just a couple of weeks. So that allowed us to see as much as possible without actually putting us in that sweat lodge that day, although we had been in the sweat lodge in 07.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you go into a great deal of detail. I want my audience to know a little bit about you. You have a B.S. in Computer Science Mathematics from the University of Santa Clara and also an A.A.S. in Medical Laboratory Technology and Electron Microscopy. You've been a medical laboratory technologist, a chemical engineer, a large computer system salesperson, and you and your husband today are certified brokers in your own real estate firm. The Joys of Real Estate is the name of your business. So I wanted them to know that. Now, one of the points that I thought was very significant, you brought out so much information. I think there were multiple levels in the experience that you had with him. And one of the first things that you say right in the beginning of your book, and I really respect this deeply, is call it a messiah complex, imposter syndrome, wounded narcissism, sociopathy, too many experimental drugs, sadism, or a death wish for himself. No one should be recklessly damaged or die in the pursuit of spiritual awakening. And that is absolutely true. There's no need for that at all. And yet, many times in our pursuit of trying to find out what makes us tick, which is part of the reason that you were attracted to him, he was very much involved in the movie The Secret and had a number of other opportunities. He achieved quite a bit of fame and recognition after that movie. And you said he lost his way, and you wished he had gone back and read the things that he had written before.
Absolutely.
Because it wasn't a part of him anymore. He had become literally separated and segregated into a modality that didn't have a relationship with what he started out with. Am I correct?
That's absolutely true. And that was part of the reason why we got blindsided so badly. I mean, here's a man who's teaching you taking personal responsibility, number one, in your life for everything that happens. He's teaching us all these things about being responsible, about how you treat other people and your entire path. He talks about the fact about how you have to be on guard. That as soon as you think you're the bomb, the universe will show you what a bomb looks like and bring you back down to earth. So because he taught us all these things, we made the jump in logic, which apparently was not a correct jump, that therefore he knows this material and he wouldn't do it himself. So as we were watching his, especially at the end of 2008, 2009, I believe he overextended himself financially, and the hype from The Secret was starting to wind down a bit on him. And he had bought the Beverly Hills mansion and you know, other things. So all of a sudden now the whole stress in his life became financial as far as getting people to sign up for more events, more expensive events. The pressure was being put on the volunteers, ourselves included, where we're there really just to help other people and facilitate the activities, but all of a sudden now we're being told we have to sell. It's our responsibility to sign people up, which of course we rejected, and that got us into not being in favor with him. But that was a complete switch in his behavior. So we were blindsided because we were hearing all these good things, and he's right. You know, if his teachings were bad from day one, if the very first experience we had with James Ray was marching into a sweat lodge that was run for entirely way too long and way too hot, we wouldn't all be having this discussion because we would have walked out in one of the earlier rounds and never looked back. He worked you up to that level after many, many activities, and just very quickly some of the activities are breaking boards or concrete slabs with your hands, bending rebar with your throat, walking fire. All those things that you weren't really excited when you first had that put in front of you and thought maybe you can do it, and he's telling you you can, you do, you try it, you do it. Now, all of a sudden, what did you just do? You constantly kept proving him correct in his judgment that you could do these things and you incorrect in your judgment that you couldn't. So after a while, you develop a level of trust that maybe he does know better of what you're really capable of doing. And that's a very significant reason why those people stayed in that sweat lodge way too long. One, he promised them they'd be okay and he would take care of them. And you know, the comments like, you may think you're going to die, but you're not. You're more than your body. And again, having that trust of previous events and activities where he told you you'd be all right and that you could do it, and you did. Well, in that case, we gave him too much of the benefit of the doubt at the end.
Well, I think there's a number of points that you made in your book, and you've just a couple of them you've mentioned right now when you were talking. One is the component of trust, mm-hmm. and that you were there as a student to learn. You were dealing with certain issues in your life, and in many of the experiences you had, in fact, one of them inside the Sphinx or near the Sphinx,
mm-hmm.
Was very profound. For you, you had some really unique experiences. What was the biggest challenge that you were facing in your life at the time when you integrated with him, before he got all distorted, when you integrated with him and you were doing these travels? What was what you considered your biggest demon?
Well, my biggest demon at that point, which I knew the symptom, but I did not know the cause or was not clear on the cause, was that a lot of people think, oh, it's all just financial. I mean, people follow them because they thought they were going to be, like, rich or wealth or whatever. But mm-hmm. wealth means well-being, and many of us came to it with completely, in my case, finances weren't the issue or the reason why I was there. Obviously, we have a very successful business, or we wouldn't have managed to lost as much money as we did investing with his activities. But I was there mostly because I needed to get my health in shape. I was well over 300 pounds. And having every possible health condition you could have, and I was used to living an active lifestyle, which was stopping. So I was there to say, okay, so what is this? I mean, I'm capable in some areas of my life, and yet in this one, so basic, I am completely at loss to understand what is going on. And it was during my studies and looking at being led through activities with him that I was able to look back and see what was the cause of the weight issues, which just very briefly was I was molested as a child, and it was my protection. If I got heavy, people left mm-hmm. me alone, and I got to see that pattern, and I got to be able to understand it and really dive in, and as anybody who's ever had to tackle anything in their life, you know that you just deal with the surface, you dig that away, and you're going to find out there's more layers and more layers, and that's what I did for those 3 years. I just kept digging down into it to find out, you know, why was this seemingly out of my grasp to deal with. So that was my particular one, and I saw people dealing with all other kinds of issues in their life. It wasn't, and a lot of people have that idea that it was wealth, and wealth means money. That was not the case. We were looking for a balanced, balanced life, and that's what we were going for.
Your experience in Egypt mm-hmm. when you were on the slab, share with us just a few thoughts about that and how that impacted you.
Are you referring to being inside the Great Pyramid?
Yes, well, that and also your husband. I was thinking of the Sphinx. Your husband had been up on the Sphinx.
Well, we both were between the paws of the Sphinx. We had the opportunity,
yes.
Which there were so many experiences in Egypt that were beyond description. Amazing, amazing place. We also went to Peru with James a year later. But in Egypt, we had many spots where one in front of Sekhmet, which interestingly is the goddess temple for both healing and warfare, an interesting combination. But if you understand it, you go to war with your, quote, your demons, and that's how you heal. In other words, mm-hmm. if you try to ignore them, you're not going to lose them. You have to face them head on. That's where I got the very clear impression of that perfection was a lie. That was another one of my demons I was carrying around. I would not do a lot of things. In fact, I probably would never have written a book because I know that I'm a scientist. I am an
mm-hmm.
engineer type person. I am not a writer. I am under no delusion that I am going to be writing epics. So that would have held me back because I could not have done it perfectly. And it was in that spot with Sekhmet where I saw so many things flash in front of me as things that I should have been able to enjoy or rejoice in, but instead, you know, I found fault in them, or, you know, I put myself down for not doing even better. And that, of course, came out of childhood, and you get to look back on that, but that was one experience. The next main one was between the paws of the Sphinx. Again, we got to meditate at sunrise. in front of this thing, and you pretty much ran down all the things you had kind of worked out as the plans for your life during that previous week, and you ran it by the Sphinx kind of like to get your little test, you know, in front of the teacher to see how they're going to grade it. Did you get this right on? And it was there that not only was I told that some of the things I thought I wanted right away was not going to happen, but where I also had the image of many things, including writing a book, that I had to do first. And again, I can't stress enough, you know how they say that 95% of the people want to write a book? I am one of the 5% who had no interest in writing a book. I am a creative speller. I am an engineer. I'm the people that people wrote spell check for. So, you know, and you know where your strengths are and you know where your weaknesses are by the time you get over 50, and I was very clear on that one. So when I get this impression from the Sphinx that, one, I was going to be writing this book, two, we were going to be expanding our real estate business and actually buying our branch at a time when real estate was under a lot of stress, shall we say, and still is. These were all things that I just looked at and went, no, this is just not going to happen. It's not true. But you get to a point where I had probably the most amazing words I've ever had said to me, again, through the Sphinx. And somebody will say, well, okay, who is she talking to? Call it your guardian angel, call it your spirit guide, call it whatever you want. But you get an image, you get an impression, you get a feeling. And what I got from that was, I finally gave up. But gave up arguing. You know, you're arguing with God or whatever your source is. It's silly, but just like a child, I was going with it. It's not fair. And finally, I got to a point where I realized, okay, I'm going to have to do these things. And I said, you know, okay, if you're going to have me do all these things, you need to send me help, because it's just not fair. And the response I got back was, I have always sent you all the help you ever needed before you even knew to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, it was such a release, because I realized, okay, how can you argue with that? Really, there's nothing left to argue with there. I may not like the process, but I have to just trust. There's a trust you finally put into a higher process working, and you move ahead with it. And then after that, I got to lay down in the sarcophagus in the King's Chamber in the Great Pyramid, and again got a release. It's a rebirthing ceremony and a release, and just acknowledging, okay, you give up. But at this point, whatever you want from me, Lord, just tell me. You know, just point me in the direction, send me the help. I'm going to do the best I can to do what you need me to do, and I'm letting go of the reins. I'm letting go of the oars of the canoe, and I'm just going to let the stream take me where I need to be.
It was a very powerful story. You also have comments about new beliefs that you found that were incorporated into your life. One was, when you commit to something, there's always a way. Two, there is no failure, only feedback, and a real master knows this as it happens.
Yes.
Three, the past does not equal my future. Anything is possible. So these aspects, your belief systems, going for what you described as big, audacious goals, this was something that was taking you into a new level. This was taking you into a modality of your own inner self that really helped to change a lot of your thinking and enabled you to have integrity with yourself. So this was a point where there was this integrity you were developing with yourself, but at the same time, you were also watching things going on with James and the way that he interacted with people. And the one thing that I found so intriguing was, though you subconsciously knew that you're the one that is discovering yourself and he is a catalyst only, in and of himself, he didn't do squat. You did all the work.
That's correct.
However, he was the illusion that you continued to follow, because you still, for a long time, it took you 3 years, you still thought that he was the master guru. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. At the end of the book, I say that really what we learned from him, the number one most important lesson you can ever learn from any teacher, is know that the answers are within you and that you need to be your own guru. Fortunately, in the early part, and of course, James did a lot to foster that he was the source of all, you know, all knowledge. And he told us he was trained by shamans, and that he was a shaman, and then he was a kahuna, and on and on and on, which we later found out to be not exactly the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But when you hear that, you think, okay, look at my life. Some parts of my life are fantastic. Some really could use help. This guy's telling me he can show me the way. He's guaranteeing me, and he said those words. He'd guarantee us if we did what he told us to do, that we would be able to fix all these areas. And you dig in and you start doing the work because you take people at their word. And somewhere along the line, you finally start looking at things going, you know, at what point is this for my benefit or is it for his benefit? And, you know, when you meet a true teacher, a true shaman, a true person of spiritual awakening, they are about unconditional love. They are not about the money.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with somebody making money for helping you, but that's not their priority. And
mm-hmm.
And James made the comment once, which really floored my husband, which started to shake the whole thing up. I was that spiritual warrior, believe it or not, in 07. He made the comment that he wanted to be the first spiritual billionaire. And our reaction to that was instantaneous of, why? I mean, why does anybody want to be a billionaire? I mean, let's face it, there's only so much money you can spend in your lifetime. Give it away. You know, there's a certain point of which, he who dies with all the money leaves it behind. You know, there is no taking it with you. So we started to see this push for finances, you know, again, wanting more, financially more, that shows that there was something still in him that was very lacking, that he felt the money was going to fix or fill up. And that's where the dangerous point came. He had people who were trusting him, and there's a point where he took advantage of that.
Well, I think what happens so many times is there is a misconception, and there is nothing wrong with money. We all need it. There's always going to be some form of exchange, and in our culture and this time in history, we're using coins and paper. Thank heavens, I'd rather not use cows. It just doesn't, it doesn't transport very well.
Not very well,
though. So, these are things that we need to have an honesty about, because too many times people like to vilify money. I've heard this from people before. Oh, it's bad if you're wealthy and all this nonsense. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
There are always going to be those that don't have and those that are going to have abundantly. This is just a fact of life. It goes on and on and on. It's nothing new. It's an ever ongoing cycle. The key is that there is a place for everything. And he got lost.
Yes,
he really, really got lost. Now, we're going to move forward a little bit, and if you can stay with me some extra time, I would appreciate that, because I would like to do is talk about this retreat that was done, because this vision quest, that's what I will call it, you can call it something else, but it was to be something that was to enable people to come into harmony with themselves, and the Native Americans have done this for thousands of years. This is
absolutely
nothing new. And he had this huge site. People were paying $10,000, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
$10,000.
Plus your room and board.
So you're looking at anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000. Now,
absolutely.
You, as a member of the Inner Circle, you were paying, what, $65,000, $75,000 a year?
Yeah. Yes. Last year was about $56,000. Because we, quote, signed up early. And there's a whole story behind that, Donna, which when you read the book, you knew that we had anticipated that a large amount of that money was supposed to be used for a charitable project, which we found out the charitable project was James.
Yes.
That's
so you have these awesome amounts of money, and obviously when you're asking for that kind of money, it's going to come from people that have more affluence than normal, because the average individual isn't going to have that kind of money to just put into something and leave it behind. But maybe a lot of people went into hock just to be able to experience
this. Donna, there's no question that people went into hock. There's people who got seconds on their homes.
Amazing.
Yes. Yeah. Credit lines were extended. Credit card levels were all extended. And that, by the way, was encouraged by James. And in the book, I talk about the fact how our real estate mentor would be the exact opposite of that. He would tell you that if, you know, you got to be stable with your finances first, and if you're not, well, then maybe you can't be attending any events with him for a while until you get there.
Mm-hmm.
He told us credit cards were a tool to use very carefully, that like fire, it's necessary, but it could burn you. James saw your credit card, especially when the money was coming to him, as just another resource. He would call it green energy, and it was okay to take it to its max. So, yes, there are people there. Everybody may assume that, oh, well, then you had that money to throw away. That's not necessarily the truth. And he used sales techniques like stage hypnosis and neuro-linguistic programming and a lot of other things to talk people into things that and spending money that they didn't have. And then, by the way, he had a no-refund policy that was period. There was no refund for anything. So in a couple of days when you snap to and realize what the heck you just did, it was too late.
Well, if you had a credit card, you could always do something about it. If you didn't, if you used a debit card or something else, you wouldn't have. Because that, you know, that's something that people can do with credit cards. If they don't like it, they can say, sorry, we're not getting paid on this. Question it, and they can put a stop on it. But regardless, people were already into it. They knew what his rules were. And this situation that was done a little bit over a year ago, when the event happened, how many people were attending at the time?
Okay, if you're referring to the Spiritual Warrior event, it's usually 60 people. This was the first year he didn't have it full. It was about 55 people.
About 55 people.
Plus
and it wasn't totally full.
Mm-hmm.
And this was something that when people attended this, and you said James had an obsession with death, you said, in the Spiritual Warrior, for anything new to live, something first must die. What needs to die in you so your new life can emerge. And after day five of Spiritual Warrior, the Spiritual Warrior has conquered death and therefore has no enemies and no fear in this life or the next. This is something where I think James knew he was getting ready to crash and burn.
Oh, James has crashed and burned at a much lower level many times before. And as I said in the book, you know, we all know this. If we don't learn our lesson, it starts with a little tap on the back, you know, on your shoulder. And if you don't get the message, the universe in its ultimate compassion will give you another opportunity but warn you harder with a smack on back of your head. And if you still don't get it, it'll give you another opportunity and crack you over the top of your head with a 2x4. Well, James was going for the nuclear bomb.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we were telling him he was pushing too hard. Other people were trying to tell him he was pushing too hard. Even back in 07, that was 3 years before, I told his head of staff that this was crazy. This was way too long and way too hot, and this was crazy. Another person that was my roommate there told him that somebody was going to die in there if they didn't calm this back. The following year, believe it or not, after that, he actually made it hotter because he felt he couldn't get it hot enough in there. Again, what is hot enough? What on earth is the man trying to do? In the next year, a very close friend of ours stopped breathing twice when he came out of there in the middle. Another woman was unconscious for several hours, and another one was a friend of ours, thought she was going to die. She was laying on the ground screaming, she's dying, please get James, to be informed that he had already left and gone up to take a shower. So we thought after that year, that was 08, for sure now he got the message that this was way over the top, this was unnecessary, and he was going to pull back. That year, he also had an event where instead of breaking boards with our hands, he had us break concrete slabs with our hands. And in that one was the first time we saw a large group of people hurt, many broken bones. Several people had to go to the hospital. And we thought, and then the following year, he toned that event way back down, just to, you know, digging around for a key underneath a group of snakes. Okay, not pleasant, but nobody was going to die here. And so we thought, okay, see, he's getting the message. And we were trying to console ourselves by believing, yes, look, he's pulling back. He's getting reasonable. He's hearing it from multiple people. So when we found out in 09 that he had just gone again, one more level, even higher, hotter, longer.
Okay, I want you to stop. Connie, we've got to take a break here for just a moment. Excuse me for interrupting you. When we come back, we're going to find out what happened at that retreat, that Spiritual Warrior retreat on that very significant day, and also what is going on with James Arthur Ray's situation at this time. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Donna Sebo. My guest today is Connie Joy, Tragedy in Sedona, is the book. All of the details are here. We're going to give you a few more. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and our book that we're discussing today is the true story of the tragedy that occurred a year ago, a little bit over a year ago, in Sedona, Arizona. Connie Joy is my guest. She was part of the inner circle with James Arthur Ray. If you've ever watched The Secret, you've seen him in it. And there were, for many, many years, a lot of people that really felt that he had some kind of a magic wand. And in many ways, he did a lot of good for many individuals. But then things started going awry. We've covered a little bit of that, but I'd like to go to the day of this event and tell us where this place is. This was a special center that had been designed and built by James. Am I correct, or was it something that had been used before?
Oh, it'd been used before. Actually, it was at Angel Valley, a place that's just outside of Sedona, Arizona, and it's a place that's known for a lot of energy vortexes. The Sweat Lodge was made the size it was by his instructions, because he was, of course, trying to pack more and more people in there, which one thing I need to say right off the bat, when I'm calling this a sweat lodge, it's because he called it a sweat lodge. However, it bared very little in similarity to a true Native American sweat lodge. And the Native Americans are really getting a bum rap by having something so sacred and beautiful and special as their true sweat lodge ceremony being described by something that James did. They're not the same thing. But mm-hmm. that, just keep that one in the back of your mind. But in this event, he wanted, again, in a sweat lodge, they would never, you know, think of packing that many people in. But of course, James, the more people he can pack in there, you know, the more money he can make off of the event. And that's what he was doing. He was packing as many as he can. In 07, he felt that the lodge wasn't hot enough, so in 08, to condense the heat more, he made the ceiling lower. So when you talk about going into this kind of like a, you know, a flat igloo kind of looking tent, you were squatted way down. It's very low. There's no way you could stand up. It was maybe waist level high, and that's what you had to move around in inside with that heat. So making it that low really would have affect the airflow inside of that structure, and the ability of air to get all the way around was also an issue. So James had his specifications of what he wanted. They made the sweat lodge for it. That sweat lodge was used by a couple Native Americans for their own sweats a couple times before that with no incident, of course, because they were not trying to go as long and as hot as James was.
Now, he would have 8 rounds of this. And then, of course, in a sweat lodge, it's not unlike the saunas that the Scandinavians have used for centuries. They would heat stones, and you would put water on them, and the steam comes up. But he really had, instead of using these superheated stones for, you know, just a few of them, the amount that he used was 12, which increased the heat, took the oxygen out of the air, and then every time water was thrown on the stones, that is very, very hard to breathe in, extremely hard to breathe in.
A lot of water, Donna, a 5-gallon container of water, where in the usual
very
sweat lodge,
they
use a ladle to put a little bit of water over it. Massive difference of what he was doing.
That's correct. Then, when he was there, he would always sit by the door where there was a flap, so there was plenty of air for him to breathe.
Right.
But the people that were on the inside, the inner circle down by the stones, that's where the greatest danger was. And you and your husband were not at this event, but at a previous event, your husband had gotten people out as long as along with some others. They helped people out of the sweat lodge experience. And because of that, he just said, this is crazy, because he'd always just disappear and go up. Now, on this particular day, tell us what happened.
Well, what happened was is these people, again, something that's different in order, is James had us go on a vision quest and had them go on a vision quest for a couple of days where you're without food and without water. And the without water is, of course, now you're starting to be a situation where you're in the desert and not really well hydrated. It brings you back that morning. You have a light breakfast, and they encourage you to start drinking water. My personal experience was that by the time I got back, my thirst reflex was gone, and I couldn't drink enough water or a proper amount of water. But he brings you in there about mid-afternoon into the sweat lodge and packs the people on in there, and pretty much sets it up for you that you had spent the whole week talking about integrity, about the life of samurai, that it was better to live with honor, whether to die with honor rather than to live without it. And you make a commitment that you're going to go in, and really you don't understand what you're committing to, because he's not going to tell you the details, and you may have even known friends who had been in the sweat lodge and told you about what a great experience it had been. So you go in there with the intention that, you know, you're going to do this activity. He's telling you that you may think you're going to die, but you're not, that it's going to be excessively hot, but that you'll be okay, that you're more than your body, and that if you pass out, don't worry, he'll take care of you, and off you go. So trusting him and believing that he means what he says, and saying to yourself many times over, James is a businessman. He wouldn't have us do anything really dangerous and let us get hurt, because that would be bad for business. Mm-hmm. Again, giving him more of a benefit of the doubt than you should. He packs everybody in there, brings in a silly number of stones, hot stones from the outside, and then pours this 5-gallon bucket of water over it, drops the side of the tent, and you're in pitch black. Mm-hmm. And each round can go anywhere from around 15, 20 minutes approximately. And then he opens the flap, and you're not encouraged to leave. In fact, you're encouraged not to leave. People who tried to leave in between, first of all, you're told you could not leave when the flap was down, period, that was sacrilegious. Then you're told that if you try to even crawl out, and you remember you have to crawl out past him, because he's right there on the door. So he would tell, you know, chastise people who are trying to leave that, hey, you're more than that. You can stay. You know, what are you doing? So people would try to hang in there longer than they should be. But it wasn't until, it really was not long into this before people started to know that there was something very wrong. And definitely halfway through, people knew that this was going bad. One gentleman came outside, a friend of ours, and was a middle-aged, very healthy man, was laying on the ground thrashing, screaming that he was having a heart attack, that he didn't want to die, and that he needed help, and yet nobody's calling 911. James is yelling out at him that to quiet down, that he's not dying, and he continues on. In the meantime, there's a couple women who were carried out who had passed out, and yet on, he keeps going, and eventually there were people inside who were having trouble, and instead of bringing them out, he actually decided that they would stay put until the next round, and he was going to continue because it was too late. You know, he was dropping the flap, he was going on. So there were many, many opportunities here to see that this was getting out of hand, and yet he continued. So at the very end of this went on for two, estimates are about 2.5 hours. So again, now let's very quickly say something about saunas or steam rooms if you're trying to do an analogy. It would be closer to a steam room than a sauna and because of the amount of water that they pour on the rocks. I'm in a sauna almost every single day at my exercise club, and I sit in a sauna at 170 degrees, an IR sauna, for 20 minutes max. I set the timer for that, and I make sure I'm out of there in 20 minutes because most people would tell you that's a reasonable period of time, no more, to stay in one. And again, now we're picturing this is now for 2.5 hours, the way he's running it. The experience I had in 07, which again, to remind you, he thought was not hot enough, was way hotter than any sauna or steam room I have ever been in. Way, I mean, seared your face, your throat, your skin. You thought it was falling off. This was crazy. And that's why I left after one round in 07, went outside and went, this is way too hot. This is crazy. So I have a reference. I have the medical reference of having worked, you know, in an emergency room environment as a medical laboratory technician to know that heat stroke was nothing to play with. And I had the other reference of knowing how hot is a reasonable hot and how long is a reasonable time. So when I'm saying that these people were in there, you will hear, and you will also hear during the trial, where people describe that, you know, one woman said it was 10 times hotter than anything she'd ever experienced. This was searing steam that would move up and down around you. This was not just, oh, we're going to sit around a few hot rocks. So if I can set people's mind in that, it's pitch black in there when they drop the side, and you are packed in. People are literally leaning against the front of your legs. You have your legs pulled up underneath your chin. So you're packed into this environment. You can't move. You're afraid if you get up, you're going to step on somebody and actually hurt them. And what caught a lot of people in this, too, is they ended up laying down because it was just a little bit cooler laying down, and they were not feeling well. Well, I don't know if you've experienced it, Donna, but if you've ever gotten to that point where all of a sudden you sit up and you get really dizzy, they may have sat up and said, okay, I'm out of here. But then all of a sudden, you know, they get dizzy. Some of them passed out, so now they can't get out. They can't get out on their own. They are stuck there. Or some of them described to me where they sat up and they couldn't tell up or down. They didn't know where they were.
And one of the things that I'm going to digress for just a minute because I know we're running out of time here, but one of the things that's very significant is that James did not at any time respond to the needs of anybody. CPR was being done on a couple of people. He ignored it.
That's
he
correct.
Went back up, and when the detectives came, he said, this isn't anything at all. You don't, you know, this is gross exaggeration. This isn't, I've done nothing wrong. And the thing is that in his mind, because he was so detached and had been for so many years, then the more he got into this, the more he followed this patterning, the more detached he had to become. Because if he really looked at it, it would have scared him to death. It absolutely would have terrified him. And sometimes people don't want to go there, so they go the opposite direction. Now, I know that, again, we're getting close to time. What is the status on the court trial he's in?
The trial is scheduled now for mid-February. He's not in jail. He's out on bail.
Well,
this multimillionaire of a multimillion-dollar company suddenly had no money. So he was given a $5 million bail amount, which he had to sit in jail for several weeks until they reduced the bail amount down to a very small amount. And he's out on bail, living in his Beverly Hills home, sending out frequent emails, still trying to encourage people to buy things from him. And I just got two more today, in fact. I usually get about three a week, which I find ironic since I paid for, you know, all these events and things that didn't happen. And to my knowledge, James Ray himself, or JRI, he has not been returning that money for everybody who had paid prepaid fees for these different events, yet he's still trying to get us to buy some of his old material that he has left over in fire sales pretty much from his previous company. So that's what he's doing. In February, the trial is going to be in Yavapai County, which the main seat of that county is Prescott, Arizona. I'm sure people will hear about it as it happens. He's hired himself a dream team of two sets of lawyers, and has money that he has put in trust with them to pay for his defense, but he personally apparently has no money. That is what he's claiming. There's still
he'll put it somewhere. Yeah,
he'll put it's yes. And there's still and there's people hurt. Our very dear friend is still has no sense of taste or smell. He was the first one life lighted out. Huge medical bills that you know, he had no medical coverage. That he's just trying to deal with and survive. Massive headaches. Can't sleep. Our the second person life lighted out was a very good friend of mine, Liz Newman, who did die 9 days later after a coma. And there's people with organ failure and other different degrees of injuries from this that are still out there.
It's an incredible story. And for those of you listening, if you'd like to find out more, and of course you can find out about the book, go to tragedyinsedona.com, tragedyinsedona.com. Connie Joy, thank you for staying with me some extra time here. Your book is an incredible read. I congratulate you on conquering your demons and waking up to what was really going on. It's not an easy thing to do, but it's a good thing you did. This is Donna Sebo. Connie Joy has been my guest. The book is Tragedy in Sedona. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today, 800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. 888-815-9756 if you'd like to call in and chat with me and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. And don't forget, if you have a story about the paranormal, I would love to hear from you. I know we've got a caller on the line, but I'd like to hear from you because I'm putting together material for a book. And I would like your story to be in there. Why? Because when we share what we experience, it may help somebody else. And I've had plenty of my own experiences, but I love hearing about yours. So be sure and send it to me. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. The deadline for submitting a story for the book publication is going to be January the 1st, 2011. So get it off to me, and then I will put it in the file along with so many others. And you may have the opportunity to be there. We'll be in touch with you if that is the case. Let's go to our first caller. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna.
Hi, first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
It's Pat in Connecticut. How are you?
Well, I'm doing wonderfully, Pat. Did you have a chance to listen to my guest?
I did. I didn't hear the last bit, but it was really fascinating.
Oh, yes. Stories like this come up every once in a while, and I've met individuals that are proponents of certain patternings of, what do I want to say, elite attitudes, and usually you find out that they do have clay feet. There's no one on this planet, period, that is perfectly perfect. It isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I'm so pleased that I was able to get Connie on the air because she's very articulate, as you heard, and she's right. really together. She was yeah. a very interesting subject. Well, Pat, did you have a question for me today?
I do. I've talked to you about getting a dog, and this dog is supposed to be shipped up from New Jersey, and I'm getting ready, but I haven't heard from these people in like 2 weeks. And can't seem to connect with anyone. I just want to make sure that she's still coming.
Well, I would say let it go. And if you can be in touch, you know, by phone or by email, whatever the communication level is, but I'd make sure you can reach them by phone because you do not want to go through this after you would get the dog. I think they're still going to follow through, but I do feel that this isn't very professional unless they had to take a trip somewhere and they just didn't take any of their electronic stuff with them. But I think you just need to leave a message and just say, I'm very concerned. I haven't heard from you for 2 weeks. Would you please get in touch with me? Are you still planning on coming on out? Let me know one way or another and just follow through and then let it go. Leave it up to them.
Oh, okay. They are lawyers and they do this on the side. They're lawyers actually for animals.
Mm-hmm.
And they may... I was thinking perhaps they got really busy or something came up, but...
Well, they could be traveling. I mean, this is something that people do. So
yeah.
I think in our world today, because we have such instantaneous messaging,
yes.
we just take it for granted that people are going to have this with them 24 hours a day. I know I don't. And when I'm on the road traveling, I am not necessarily going to have access to certain electronic opportunity, as it happened when I was in New York. And so you may not be reachable for the time
mm-hmm.
that you're on the road. It all depends, unless someone
right.
has set up a voicemail answering service and they check in with it on a regular basis. So
yeah.
I know we like to have instant gratification so many times, but I would just let this go.
Right.
I wouldn't push it.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. You have a wonderful day, and good luck to you when you get your little baby. That baby's going to keep you busy, 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 busy.
Okay. Thank you, Donna.
You're
bye-bye.
Welcome. Bye-bye. By the way, I know we've got another caller. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Greg Corbon, Beyond Reason. This is a wonderful, heartwarming story, an amazing story about his son. He was 9 years old. Just before his 10th birthday, he passed away. An incredible story that this father is going to be sharing. So I hope you'll join me. Let's go to our next caller. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna.
Hi, who am I speaking with?
JL.
And where are you, JL, in the country?
Brooklyn, New York.
In Brooklyn. So glad you're on the air. I know we're getting close to running out of time, dear. Did you have a direct question for me today?
I have a question about my job right now because it's very frustrating and sometimes I feel like giving up, but I'm not sure what to do.
Well, I don't think you need to give up. I think what you need to do is really look at your job and what you can gain from being in it. What kind of work are you doing at this time?
Psychologist.
All right. What is it about the positioning that you have that is causing you a lot of frustration?
I work for the government, and because of that, we don't do counseling. We do a lot of testing, and we have a huge caseload. I was assigned to many schools, and this is my first year. So I just feel like I can't keep up with the compliance date.
All right. What you need to do is go in and talk to the person that's your boss, because you can keep up with it. You are the new person that's come in. You're having to learn a rhythm. You need to go in to your boss and express your concerns. And you need to go in. Let me make a suggestion. Go in and say, I would appreciate some suggestions from you. What would you recommend that I do? They really don't expect you to fulfill all of your compliance level. It's not humanly possible in their book. They know that. But you've got a learning curve. So they're expecting you to go through some growth patterns. Hon, I hate to cut you short. I really do, but I'm out of time.
Uh-huh.
So if you want to call
back. Do you think I'll be fired?
No, I don't think you'll be fired unless you just say, oh, well, I give up. if you want to talk to me more about this, why don't you call me back? Because I am out of time, and I cannot really give you very much feedback in this amount of time. And I'm so sorry, JL. This is Donna Sebo. You're welcome, dear. I've run out of time. Tomorrow we'll be back here, same time, same place. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Never, ever turn it over to anybody else. It belongs to you. It is your rightful heritage that you are a soul in growth. Hey, we all are. But remember, your mind belongs to you, not to anybody else. God bless. We'll see you here tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on The Donna Sebo Show. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.